High above Earth's windy skies, slowly rotating through the silent voids of space, is the Arthur C. Clarke Astronomical Observatory, Starlab. 1,500 kilometers beyond Starlab, two drone laboratory pods float in a safety orbit. Aboard the Anubis, Dr. Paul Kramer is conducting a dangerous hydrogen plasma experiment. Aboard the OSIRIS, Starlab Research Director Maura Cassidy monitors the experiment's data. As the experiment draws to a close, Dr. Kramer contacts Maura.
Maura, I'm reading a ship in the area, 057 and closing.
Yes, I see it. It's black, shaped like a bat. Tremendous wingspan. It's moving into a parking orbit directly above us. Something's coiling out of one of those nose vents. Carl! Oh, it's moving toward!
The Anubis erupts in a fury of twisting light and shattered metal, killing Dr. Kramer instantly. News of the tragedy is flashed to Captains John Graydon and Buddy Griff at the nearby Stargazer security station. The two pilots jet toward the area of the explosion aboard the new deep space interceptor Solaris, while the bat-winged alien vessel moves into a parking orbit behind the moon.
What quantity of hydrogen plasma was withdrawn from the Earth probe by our penetrator before the explosion?
2,000 fusion qubits.
I wonder what the humanoid was doing with so vast a quantity of concentrated hydrogen.
Meanwhile, John and Buddy have located the plasma chamber from the Anubis. And as John watches the lifeform scanner screen, Buddy takes the chamber into the ship's recovery bay with magnetic grapplers. Suddenly...
Skipper, get down here. The plasma chamber. There's a hole in it the size of my fist. And so help me God, I can hear someone breathing.
John rushes to the recovery bay where he and Buddy frantically unseal the huge plasma chamber with high-speed pulse wrenches. Inside, they find...
Maura!
Light! All around. Right. Blinding.
Take it easy, Maura. You're safe now.
Oh, safe. I'm safe. Inside.
Buddy, we just took Maura out of a one-ton plasma chamber, hermetically sealed from the outside, with no way in except through a six-inch hole. Now, how in the name of God did she get in there?
John's question is answered 2 days later, when a shimmering pool of unearthly radiance appears to Maura as she sits alone in her quarters. From within the pool, the timeless voice of Echo, the Keeper of Eight, the free energy being from a lost parallel universe.
The vampire ship that killed Dr. Kramer is part of an armada for Liverconian system. The Draconians are hydrogen guild breathers. They need vast amounts of hydrogen to restabilize themselves. And they intend to take it from the Earth's oceans.
Pure oxygen is one of the most explosive gases in the universe. The Earth would be saturated with it if they removed the hydrogen from our oceans. Echo... how can we stop them? Where's the armada? What are their weaknesses?
I have to leave you now, Maura.
As Maura discusses the strange appearance and disappearance of Echo with John and Buddy, an intercom message comes through from Dr. Valerie Reed, head of Starlab's Plasma Research Unit.
I don't think that Draconian ship is very far away. The element scanners are reading a first magnitude concentration of hydrogen somewhere behind the moon.
That might be it.
Well, there's only one way to find out.
After boarding the Solaris, Maura, John, Buddy, and Dr. Reed jet toward the moon to investigate the bat-winged alien vessel as part two of The Keeper of Eight takes us into the mysterious light and shadow of not one... but two alien worlds.
Solaris to Starlab.
Starlab, go ahead, John.
Our scanners have just locked onto the Draconian ship. It's hovering 50 kilometers above the Lucas Kubra crater chain. THX coordinates 1138 at subvector 2001.
We're locking in now.
Thanks, Jerry. Solaris out.
John, Valerie and I are getting a little edgy back here. Isn't there something we can do?
How about a snack?
Oh, buddy, how can you think of food at a time like this?
It's easy. I'm hungry.
Skipper, is there an echo in here?
There is nobody.
Mora? Incredible.
What is it, buddy?
Would you believe a mysterious pool of talking light?
Echo?
Hello, Mora. Hello, Valerie.
We'll be there in a flash.
You certainly will.
Mora! Valerie!
Oh, Echo, that was fantastic. Wow, what a rush.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Echo, how do you get people from one place to another so fast?
Mora knows. She's been through the process before.
Echo, I'm beginning to feel a little strange. So am I.
Me too. What's going on?
You're all about to enter a metamorphic coma. And when you return to consciousness, you'll discover that in addition to being oxygen breathers, you'll be right at home in a hydrogen environment as well.
But why?
You'll see. Pleasant dreams.
In The Rime of the Ancient Mariner, Samuel Coleridge writes, "O sleep, it is a gentle thing, beloved from pole to pole. She sent the gentle sleep from heaven that slid into my soul." A poem from the distant past, perfectly echoing the deep, metamorphic future sleep that silently enfolds Mora, John, Buddy, and Valerie on the extraterrestrial frontier of an alien world. Side of the moon to investigate the Draconian vampire ship. 8 minutes away from visual contact with the alien vessel, Echo, the Keeper of Eight, materializes and subjects Mora, John, Buddy, and Dr. Valerie Reed to molecular transmutation. A few moments later, they fall into a deep metamorphic coma that will radically alter their cellular pathology and body chemistry. A transcendental sleep from which they will awaken with the ability to breathe lethal hydrogen.
What year is it?
It's still 2026, buddy. How do you feel?
Well, that's the best snooze I've ever had.
Echo, why have you made it possible for us to breathe hydrogen?
So you can survive aboard the Draconian vampire ship.
Oh, yeah? And me without my wooden stake.
And me without my Christopher Lee outfit.
Echo, what do you want us to do?
The very thing you all want to do. Go aboard their vessel and meet them face to face.
Well, that sounds very dangerous.
The Draconians had planned to withdraw all the hydrogen from the oceans of Earth. It's a final, desperate attempt at survival. They're not an aggressive race. They only use their armada as a bluff toward hostile intruders. If their system weren't so divided by the reactionary pressures of civil war, Warp, Mosk, and Vena wouldn't be acting so silly.
Warp, Mosk, and Vena? Who are they?
Warp is head of the Draconian Coalition. Mosk is his subordinate preceptor. And Vena is magistrate of the Opposition Alliance.
What can we do?
Tell Warp and Mosk where they can find alternate sources of pure hydrogen.
How are we going to do that?
I know where the sources are, Mora. And I'll tell you where they are before you see Warden and Musk.
Well, wouldn't it be easier if you just told them yourself?
Yes, it would. But if I did, Draconia and Earth would still be strangers to each other. You see, I arrange circumstances wherein strangers become friends. Now, how do you suppose they'll feel about Earthlings if you guarantee their survival for centuries to come?
Are you sure we'll be safe?
Buddy, you already are.
Right. Right, we already are.
Attention, Earth ship. You're intruding into a Draconian defense perimeter.
I believe there's a call for you, John.
Yeah.
With your permission, my lord.
My time is yours, Musk.
The Earth vessel is holding its position.
Is it a fighting ship?
Yes, my lord. 5 binary laser turrets and an ancillary system of particle beam injectors.
Then our destruction is a certainty.
The Earthlings don't wish to engage us, my lord. They've asked permission to come aboard.
For what reason?
They claim to have information that will ensure the survival of Draconia.
Without going to war?
Yes, my lord. Without going to war.
What is your opinion, Musk?
They know why we're here. They even know our names. Those 2 facts alone lead me to believe they've had a visitation from the Keeper.
The Keeper wasn't always our enemy, Musk.
Yes, my lord.
Chaos. Desperation. Oh, this terrible civil war.
We've gained more than we've lost, my lord.
Yes, but our methods. Why were we so blind and arrogant, Musk? We should have begun our search for alternate sources of hydrogen half a century ago. Yes, we should have listened to the Keeper then.
Perhaps the Earthlings are giving us one final chance to listen now.
Have them come aboard, Musk.
Yes, my lord.
They're certainly taking their time about it, aren't they?
Take it easy, Valerie. Echo wouldn't have left us alone out here if it wasn't safe.
Attention, Solaris. You have been granted permission to come aboard. Guide your vessel under ours and enter through the illuminated docking bay. Will you require survival costumes?
No, we're able to survive in your atmosphere.
Proceed.
Firing the inertia rockets of the Solaris, John slowly guides the sleek white interceptor under the huge black Draconian ship and enters a docking bay illuminated with diffused violet light. As the shadow sentries stand silent, Mora, Buddy, John, and Valerie move into the airlock of the Solaris and prepare to enter the hydrogen's strange atmosphere of an alien world. Alien Worlds continues. Mora, John, Buddy, and Valerie have entered the Draconian vampire ship, their body chemistry temporarily altered by Echo, the Keeper of 8, an alteration that allows them to breathe the hydrogen atmosphere of the huge bat-winged spacecraft. During the 2 hours that have passed since they entered the alien vessel, Warp, head of the Draconian coalition regime, has decided to reconsider his attack on Earth's hydrogen-rich oceans, a decision based on a mysterious series of star charts Mora has given him.
Forgive my skepticism, Mora. Are you absolutely certain these star charts are accurate?
I'm positive, Warp.
Well, we'll know soon enough. I didn't realize there were so many sources of hydrogen within our own galaxy. This planet here, it's uninhabited. Its atmosphere is hydrogen fuel, and it's only a fractional light year away from Draconia.
With your permission, my lord.
Yes, Blur. What is it?
I've just received a report from our equatorial observatory. The three planets are there, just as the star charts indicate.
Thank you, Blur. I didn't even notice them before.
Well, to be perfectly honest, Warp, they weren't there before.
You confuse me.
The Keeper of Eight.
So, the creation of these planets is his work.
He didn't create them, Warp. They already existed. He simply borrowed them from the Turalian system.
With your permission, my lord.
Contact the Armada. There will be no war with Terra or any other planet. We're going home.
Oh, thank goodness.
A few moments later, Warp's message is flashed to the Draconian Armada as it enters Jupiter space. 200 multi-atmosphere assault cruisers, 1,800 siege raiders, 600 defense penetrators, and 1,000 armed hydrogen tankers slowly break formation, turn 180 degrees, and regroup near Callisto, one of Jupiter's nine moons. The Armada's new course? Draconia, by way of the Twilight Meridian. Meanwhile, in the launch bay of Warp's command ship, Mara, John, Buddy, and Valerie prepare to board the Solaris for their return flight to Starlab.
It's unfortunate that we couldn't have spent more time together, Mara.
Well, we'll have plenty of time together at the beginning of Terra's new solar year, Warp.
I don't understand.
6 months from now, an intergalactic congress will convene on Starlab. I'm going to arrange for Draconia to be represented.
Thank you, Mara. I only hope
for... My lord.
Mask. What's wrong?
A communique from the Armada. As it was leaving Jupiter space, it passed a flight of opposition alliance tankers and siege raiders. Vena is proceeding with the assault on Terra.
Wasn't she told the Keeper has provided...
She dismissed the information as a deceit tactic to prevent her from reaching Terra before we do.
Then it looks like we're right back where we started.
Buddy, where are you going?
To use the radio in the Solaris. Somebody has to tell Stargazer to scramble those interceptors.
That's my boy.
Pilots and crews, attention. This is a priority combat alert. Launch factor, red. Rendezvous with Solaris at THX coordinates 1138, subvector 2001.
As three squadrons of SET interceptors bank away from Stargazer and jet toward the dark side of the moon, John, Buddy, and Warp board the Solaris and blast out of the Draconian command ship's launch bay.
The guidance thrusters on all our ships are located in outboard wing pods. By disabling any two pods on either wing, the ship will be unable to maneuver and will be forced to withdraw from combat.
SET leader to Solaris, we have you inside, over.
Max, is that you?
Interested, John. What's happening?
There's a flight of Draconian ships between Jupiter and Mars. Subvector coordinates 047. Target grid Alpha 9 or 6. Attack pattern Omega Blue. Now, this is a non-lethal engagement, Max. Direct your fire at their wing pods only.
Roger, wing pods only.
Okay, let's go.
There they are, Skipper.
John, before you commence the attack, I'd like to try to reason with Vena.
Open a close proximity channel, buddy.
Okay, Warp. Go ahead.
Vena, can you hear me?
I hear you, Warp.
The Keeper has placed infinite sources of hydrogen in our galaxy.
You believed me before, Warp.
Vena, this is Captain John Graydon, commander of Earthship Solaris. Warp is telling you the truth.
Have you formed an alliance with Warp, Captain?
Not just with Warp, with all Draconians.
Warp doesn't represent all Draconians. I'm leading my ships to Terra.
Solaris to SET leader, over.
Go ahead, Solaris.
Take Blue Squadron in over the tankers.
Will do, John.
Skip, we got a bogey at 2 o'clock. Yellow Squadron, circle the perimeter of the tanker formation and watch for targets of opportunity.
Roger.
Red Squadron, behind us, 2x2.
Roger.
Remember, wing pods only. Let's go. To all squadrons, regroup at 2190 degrees and hold your positions.
I got a scope on it, Skip.
How's it look, buddy?
Hard to tell. There's a lot of wing debris floating around out there.
Alvina is now ready to listen to reason.
Vox, have you a casualty report?
There are no casualties, Vina. Neither death nor injury. It appears that the attack objective was to disable our ships, not take lives.
I don't understand.
You haven't understood for a long time, Vina.
Echo.
Vina. Vina, Vina, whatever am I going to do with you? You're such a fool.
Am I?
Yes. And the stubborn one at that. The Earthship attack wasn't calculated to destroy you. Only your belief in armed force and your conceit that you are right and war is wrong. War never determines who's right, Vina. Only who's left. Now, if you really care about the future of Draconia, you'll return to Warp Ship with Captain Wayne and stay there until you and Warp resolve your differences.
I'll go, Echo, but I...
No buts about it, Vina. Remember, those three hydrogen planets are a gift. And what the Keeper give us, the Keeper can darn well remove it.
You mean you've been trying to get these two together for 50 years?
That's right, Mara. Half a century ago, I proved to Warp that Draconia's hydrogen would be totally depleted within 35 solar years. He said that was more than enough time to find alternate hydrogen sources and went on about his business. Then I told Nina, who finally made it known to the entire planet. But she turned around and used it as a political issue to agitate against war.
How many times over the past 50 years have you tried to bring them together?
I lost count, which for me isn't easy. I finally left them alone to learn their lessons the hard way. But when they decided to extend their foolishness to Terra, I came out of retirement.
I'm glad it's over, Echo.
Yes, thank you for returning us to ourselves.
Echo, there's something I've been meaning to ask you. Why are you called the Keeper of Eight?
Why, buddy, don't you know what you get when you lay the figure eight on its side?
Infinity. The symbol for infinity. Infinity.
I live inside eternal mist, where children dream and lips are kissed, and wander ancient starlit shores that lead through misty midnight doors. I tinker with time. I toy with space. I change the shape of fortune's face. Now you know why the Keeper of Eight has a name that rhymes with fate.
The Keeper of Eight was written by Ron Thompson and starred Linda Gary, Chuck Olson, Bruce Miller, and Corey Burton, with special guest stars Peter Leeds, Loreen Tuttle, Janet Waldo, Joe Mascolo, Pete Renaday, and Ellie Tompkins. Special voice parts by Renee Faryar, Barbara and Tom Rounds, Nikki Wine, and Scott Payton. Associate producer Jeff Allen. Music director Tom Rounds. Our engineer was Stu Jacobs. Technical consultant Peter Skye. Vocoder by Kai Krause.
Alien Worlds was created, produced, and directed by Lee Hansen and is distributed by Watermark Incorporated. And so, until next week, this is Roger Dressler inviting you to join us for another adventure on Alien Worlds.